as we begin this new year and look at it, we have Elizabeth Warren, we have Amy Klobuchar, who are both polling well, raising the money they need, and, you know, going to be entering a series of primaries early in this year. And the thought there, the strategy there is, let's get behind them. I don't think we have to choose one, as some people sort of claim, but work really hard to make the case that, yes, these candidacies are viable, their messages are clear, their policy proposals make sense, and then see how they do and come together around them.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. Happy New Year, and what an exciting year it is. 2020 is a history-making year for women. It will mark the century milestone of women in the United States winning suffrage, the right to vote, in 1920. In some states, though, black women weren't able to vote until the 1960s due to voter registration restrictions put in place to deny voting rights to people of color. 2020 also marks 5 years into the Sustainable Development Goals, 10 years since the establishment of UN Women, 20 years since the landmark UN Security Council resolution on women, peace, and security, and 25 years since the Beijing Declaration and Platform for Action. So what does all of this mean? 2020 is an important year for reflection, commitment, and action when it comes to gender equality. It is also election year in America. Over the last 150 years, there've only been a few dozen women who've thrown their hat into the ring, and only one, Hillary Clinton, who won the nomination of a major political party. The fact that Hillary won the popular vote by a large margin proves that a woman is indeed electable. And even more so since the 2016 election, given the overwhelming female representation among 2020 Democratic candidates, which has now dwindled down to Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar. So it is 2020. What would it take for a qualified, experienced, and nominated woman to become president? On this episode, Rebecca Siv, author of Vote Her In, Your Guide to Electing Our First Woman President, will share the different challenges women leaders face working in politics and what it really takes for a woman to make it to the top. Lover or hater, when Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, she proved that women are indeed electable. The argument of electability no longer holds as a reason not to elect capable women leaders. So why is it so much harder for women? According to research, while people might deny they hold sexist views, they still remain concerned that other people do, often leading them to prefer male presidential candidates. It is sexism by proxy. And in a close election, voters believe that any disadvantage can make you a loser, so why take another chance? The problem isn't that a woman cannot win the presidency. The problem may be that many voters are simply not convinced. Overcompensating to beat Trump at all costs, the electorate may very well choose the safest, least interesting candidate, the one less representative of our diverse country, and as a result, the one arguably less likely to beat Trump. While we have come a long way, given that 100 years ago women were not even able to vote, we still have a really long way to go when it comes to gender equality in politics, as women continue to encounter challenges from sexist double standards to gendered questioning to harassment and even alleged assault. Despite these ingrained challenges, Rebecca Siv believes we are making progress, even if it doesn't look like it yet.
Well, you know, it's been a gradual process in the United States, really beginning in the late 1960s when certain powerful women's organizations came into being that advocated for women's political advancement. And so there's been this steady, albeit slow, increase of women in legislative positions as well as in appointed positions. And then, of course, by 2008, we had a woman, Secretary Clinton, running for president. And here we are 10 years later at the next marker, which is, you know, several women running for president on the Democratic side. Maybe things will change on the Republican side, maybe not, but at the outset earlier this year, there were 6 women. So I think the point here is that the world recognized and women recognized that, you know, we've been at this for 40 years here, and in terms of seeking powerful political positions in any number, and we're just going to go for the big one. You know, at the end of 2019, we've seen Kamala Harris drop out and Senator Gillibrand earlier in the year. But the fact remains, politics is a campaign, and sometimes your campaign prevails and sometimes it doesn't. It doesn't mitigate. And I think this is really the important point for women and girls as we look at what these women are doing. It doesn't mitigate taking that first step, right? Putting yourself out there, deciding to run, win or lose. And so I think that's equally true, of course, in the business world. Only one person's going to get to be CEO, right? But if there are a number of women in the C-suite, you know, we've made progress. So that's how I hope as we begin the new year, we look at what these women are doing.
There is growing recognition of the untapped capacity and talents of women and women's leadership. Over the last 2 decades, the rate of women's representation in national parliaments globally has increased from 11.8% in 1998 to 23.5% in 2018. Women's political participation results in tangible gains for democracy, including greater responsiveness to citizens' needs, increased cooperation across party and ethnic lines, and a more sustainable future. Even with these slow gains, there's still people who might ask, why does it matter if we have more women in politics? Women's participation in politics helps advance gender equality and affects a range of policy issues that get considered and the types of solutions that are proposed. As more women are elected to office, there is an increase in policy making that emphasizes quality of life and reflects the priorities of families, women, and ethnic and racial minorities. Having more women in politics benefits everyone.
If you look across the institutional sectors of life and work globally, the higher up the ladder you go, the fewer women there are. And at the same time as that is true, it's true that it's women in positions of executive leadership and legislative leadership, for instance, who really advocate for programs and services and policies that improve the lives of women and girls. You know, this expression that you can't be what you can't see, right? So while we say to girls, wherever they are, you can be anything you want, you know, work hard, go to school, get a good education. The fact of the matter is that there are significant structural barriers to women's advancement to these top positions. So my business case is the world would be a better place if more women had executive responsibility, whether it's the CEO of a company or the head of a university or running the UN or president of the United States.
Statistics from the Pew Research Institute underline that most of the world's nations have never had a female leader. Of those that did, 60% have had women heads of states or governments for 4 years or less. Why is it that the United States, touted as the most powerful and influential country in the world, has never had a female president? Politics is still viewed as the old boys' club, with any woman already involved viewed as exceptions to the rule rather than the norm. This fosters a culture that favors men who are already known within their political party over women who might not be as visible. So in 2020, what can we do to raise the platform of female candidates running for president?
Well, the first strategy is, I think, recognizing that at the same time, there are both a number of women who are qualified, and that if women come together behind those women, they really have a fighting chance. So if you look at the history of presidential campaigns in the United States, you'll see, for instance, in the most recent example of a Democratic president, that but for women voters, President Obama needed substantial support from women. So that beginning part of the strategy is, as I said, women coming together behind these candidates, women getting in the race. And so as we begin this new year and look at it, we have Elizabeth Warren, we have Amy Klobuchar, who are both polling well, raising the money they need. and, you know, going to be entering a series of primaries early in this year. And the thought there, the strategy there is, let's get behind them. I don't think we have to choose one, as some people sort of claim, but work really hard to make the case that, yes, these candidacies are viable, their messages are clear, their policy proposals make sense, and then see how they do and come together around them. And I guess I would say one other thing about the strategy, the quote notion of electability that's sort of floating around in the media. Electability has to do with our coming together, voters, activists, to demonstrate that, yes, we are enthusiastic about this person. It doesn't have to do with, you know, sort of vague rhetorical notions of what might matter and speculation, which there's just been, I think, altogether too much of.
Even if we elect women leaders into positions of power, this doesn't remove the challenges that all women face in politics. This includes a range of difficulties, from sexism in the political establishment to concerns about campaign funding inequalities to wealth gaps and even difficulty managing motherhood and working life. Here, Rebecca shares more on how all women in politics can navigate systemic barriers to their advancement.
Well, historically, you know, the research has shown that there's a set of barriers. This has been documented. One is, and I think this is a big one, and happily neither Senator Gillibrand nor Senator Harris made this mistake, women wait too long to run. And, you know, the air is more rarefied, but most importantly, the men who started sooner have already gotten further. The second thing is that women historically have had a harder time raising money, although that's not as compared to male candidates in equivalent positions or campaigns. That's less true these days. You know, Elizabeth Warren's doing just fine, for instance, competing ably with the three men that are her primary competitors, at least at the moment. Another issue, and this is, of course, a profound one, is that women continue, and I think this is true worldwide, to have more responsibility for the general home and household activity and for childcare in particular. So, you know, these are barriers that women have faced. And the good news is that, you know, women have sought to overcome them and have. If you look at Senator Gillibrand, she ran for the Senate and for the presidency with young children. Senator Harris showed something else, which is that a woman without children can run at the highest levels. And I can tell you that back in the day, I mean, this is just ridiculous. People would say to women who wanted to run, you have to have children. You have to show, quote, that you're a normal woman. So I think that the barriers continue to exist. The other one being that, you know, men get together in the proverbial locker room and say, well, gee whiz, we want Joe to run. You know, and there are no women in that locker room. So there's a closed door there. But I think while they exist, there's just been a revolution, you know? I mean, there's no other way to put it since the 2016 presidential, when Hillary Clinton did get more votes than Donald Trump. More individual voters said, yes, we want this person who's a woman. So my contention is that in one of those, you know, largest countries in the world, one of the most influential, we've shown that, yes, we're willing to have a woman in charge. And with that knowledge, which we didn't have before 2016, we can, you know, work to overcome these continuing barriers.
So it is 2020, and we need to take action to support gender equality in politics. Here, Rebecca shares what each of us can do.
So the most important thing, and everyone can take this step, it doesn't matter where you live, you know, what your income is, what your family situation is. The first step is coming together with the other women in your life, you know, your family, your friends, your colleagues, and saying to them, let's talk about why this is so important and why we care about, you know, a woman being in charge. And then let's keep talking to other people. The thing here is, you know, there's so much discussion in the media and all of that about polling and money and all this kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is that every woman has a vote and every woman has a voice. And she can use both of those to make her case and to collaborate come together with other women. So women, come together, talk about why this is important, figure out what you can do in your community to advocate for this importance. So when the opportunity comes to vote, you're there and you're doing it.
While women make up more than 50% of the population in the United States, they're rarely seated at tables where important decisions are being made. Fixing this starts with acknowledging that we have a problem, and then doing everything possible to get many more women into the political pipeline. This is not a women's issue. It's not a partisan issue. It's a human issue. It's a matter of ensuring that we have diversity at the top of American politics and politicians that reflect the people of this country. Isn't that what democracy is all about? Getting more women into politics starts with each of us. We can all become advocates for gender parity by voting, being engaged citizens, speaking out against inequality, or even running for office ourselves, or encouraging other women to do so, and supporting women who are elected. In 2020, we can all commit to taking action. Thank you for tuning into our episode today. We have so many exciting interviews and partnerships in store for 2020, so please stay tuned. If you're interested in partnering with us or being a guest on the show, then please reach out through our website, thefixpodcast.org. You can also sign up to our weekly newsletter and contribute your story there. Thanks again, and I'll catch you all again next week.